I'm correspondent Tom Willimer reporting from Little Rock, Arkansas at the historic Arkansas Museum, where I had the absolute pleasure to meet Suzanne and Jim, two folk singers who had come to the museum to do a presentation on campaign songs from historic presidential elections. Come along and join Suzanne and Jim as they share their story and sing some songs.
Kind of hamming it up, isn't she?
So how'd you all wind up here in Little Rock?
Well, we've been traveling and performing for 25 years, and you get around to about every place. Or you try to, but many years ago, we came here for the territorial fair that they have every May and fell in love with this place, and I think they fell in love with us. So we try to come just about every year. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
We were here yesterday specifically to present a program of campaign songs from historic presidential elections.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which people can find out about on our website, www.suzannajim.com.
Can you do a piece from presidential elections?
Yeah, let's
maybe
do
one
indie.
Of the roots?
We do a piece from Tippecanoe and Tyler too. We do that song, and which is probably one of the oldest ones that we're presenting this year.
So would it be fair to say music is political propaganda?
You know, back then they didn't have radio, they didn't have a television, but what they did have were like the minstrel show. So every little opera house would have a minstrel show come in. They would do the latest music. So what happened is they took songs that people recognized and they put new words to them. And they themselves became the media and campaign for their candidate.
Oh, interesting.
So it's more considered in the light of being a marketing tool, because music, as you know, has a way of penetrating itself into the hippocampal gyrus, where all your best memories are stored in there. This one came from the campaign of 1928, and it's the campaign song for Republican candidate Herbert R. Hoover. And the unique thing about this song is his principal qualification for the office of president was that he received an endorsement from the most popular non-political, non-military, non-sports, non-entertainment American of the day, Charles A. Lindbergh. 3, 4.
Charles Lindbergh flew his plane all the way to France. Most of the way he flew out of seat of his pants. Good old America, know how that's the way it ought to be. And if he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me.
If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me. If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me. If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me. Herbert Hoover is the only man to keep our country free.
Back in the war, he saved us from the Kaiser. Now he'll give us something more. He'll serve as the president of the land of the free. And if he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me.
If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me. If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me. If he's good enough for Lindy, he's good enough for me. Herbert Hoover.
This is the campaign song from the election year 1856 for the Democratic candidate James Buchanan, and it was written by Stephen Collins Foster, and it was mostly because of a family connection. His sister Ann Eliza had married Buchanan's brother Edward. The interesting thing about this song to us initially was that it's one of the first widespread uses of the expression White House to refer to the executive mansion. So this song intends to put Buchanan in the White House chair. Not as many people realize that Foster was a very accomplished flute player. So we have set this piece in a way that we hope Mr. Foster would approve, or his shade, whichever is closest at hand.
Let all our hearts for union be, for the North and South are one. They've worked together manfully, and together they will still work on. So come ye men from every state, our creed is broad and fair. Buchanan is our candidate, and we'll put him in the White House chair. Designing band to rule with secret sway. We give to all a helping hand and be open as a light of day. We'll not outlaw the land that holds the bones of Washington, where Jackson fought and Marion bled, and the battle of the brave were won. Buchanan is our candidate, and we'll put him in the White House chair.
These songs need to be seen as a marketing tool in a time prior to the mass media of today. And as we know, the song is the quickest way to teach a lesson. That's how we teach a child the alphabet, with a song. To illustrate the extent to which songs remain in our memory, I like to do this little test, answer and response. I start it, you all finish it. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz.
What a relief it is.
Yeah, see, you can't get rid of these things. Dr. Oliver Sacks calls them an earworm. And so
can't get them out.
So the songs, being set usually to familiar melodies, the new words were quite easy to adapt. And literally, in many cases, it began in the year 1840 with the Log Cabin Hard Cider campaign for William Henry Harrison. And the Whig started this whole hoorah campaign style with parades and rallies and sloganizing. They popularized Keep the Ball Rolling. They made large paper mache balls covered with leather or tin, rolled them through the streets of town at Whig rallies, chanting their slogans.
And that's the genesis of Keep the Ball Rolling.
Yeah. Well, that popularized that expression. They enough so that when his grandson used it again in 1882, he also used that same tactic. They made big paper mache balls. Paraphernalia and memorabilia. A distiller had glass bottles blown in the shape of a log cabin, and the whiskey was inside, and his name on it, the letters B-O-O-Z, which is how we come to know
booze as booze. Wow. Isn't that amazing?
Odds and ends of these things done afterwards. There was a campaign songster for Harry Truman. But this initial bout of singing so overwhelmed the Democrats that they could only do a very feeble response, I think. This is a quote from the Albany Argus, a Democratic newspaper of the time. "It has come to our attention that Whig mothers are putting their babies to rest in Tippecanoe cradles," paraphernalia, say. "We recommend the following ditty as an accompaniment.
Rock-a-bye, baby, daddy's a Whig. When he comes home, hard cider he'll swig. When he has swug, he'll fall in the stew, and down will come Tyler and Tippecanoe. Rock-a-bye, baby, now don't you cry. You need not fear old Tip and his tie. What they have ruined, Van Buren will fix. Van's a magician, they are but tricks."
Oh. How about one before we go?
Political campaign songs, especially written for a particular candidate. The standard has been, really, since 1932, that someone in the candidate's advisory group, or perhaps the candidate, selects a particular song, already written, well-known, that they feel resonates with the candidate's message or has some relevant phrasing in it or something. In 1932, Franklin Roosevelt thought that Anchors Away would be the very fitting song for his campaign because honoring his service as Secretary of the Navy. But apparently some people in his advisory staff heard it and thought it was a little lacking in what they really wanted. So they selected a popular song from a 1930 film, Chasing Rainbows.
So long, sad times, go long, bad times, we are rid of you at last. Howdy, gay times, cloudy, gray times, you are now a thing of the past. Happy days are here again, the skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together shout it now, there's no one who can doubt it now. Let us sing a song about it now. Happy days are here again. Your cares and troubles are gone. There'll be no more from now on. Oh, happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer. Suzanne and Jim. I am Suzanne. He is Jim. We have a website, www.suzanneandjim.com. That's SUZANNEANDJIM.com. Come visit us on the web. We are happy to be here at the Ham Museum, which is a historic Arkansas museum here in Little Rock, Arkansas. We travel full time all over the country. So
playing
come see
music
us.
Wherever
playing
you go.
Playing music wherever we go. We're maintainers of that traditional American music. So help us maintain it. We don't want to lose it.
Thank you, Suzanne and Jim. What an honor.
Thank you very much, Tom.
I'm here,
Master. Oh, yay!
So, where are you all from?
We're from Little Rock, Arkansas. Right. Well, actually, I'm from Little Rock. She's from outside of Little Rock, yeah. And we live in Bryan now. Bryan, okay. Arkansas.
And your name? Outside.
My name's Clint Stim, and yeah. This is Melinda.
Stim, my wife.
So, pretty cool music, huh?
Oh, I love it. Yes, I can't remember the last time I heard songs like that, especially live. We were actually just in downtown eating and just kind of hanging out today and wandered across this and were able to walk into the homes. They have actors here today that are, you know, acting like the old print press and the slave quarters and old homestead owners. And we stumbled across this at a good time while you were here, and it was wonderful. Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers include Melissa Corbin reporting from Tennessee, Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, Rebecca Bingham, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Steve Cook contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
Hamming it up, isn't she?